Chapter 20. Showing people to their seats in a warm, dark cinema hardly seemed like work to Lizzie. She found the Lyceum a much more attractive place now she was there during the performances. It became a place of escape, a place where dreams took on their own reality, a place filled with flickering silver light and sound, a place where stories unfolded constantly. Lizzie found it addictive. The only reality was provided by the staff, and her fellow usherettes were all fascinated, too. They laughed with the comedies, quaked at the murders, thrilled to the romances, and wanted to sing along with the musicals. Wearing her uniform dress of green serge, with its high neck and frogging of darker braid down the front, Lizzie felt part of the show. It didn't matter that they couldn't watch continuously, because they worked through several performances of every film. By then, Lizzie could recount the storyline, and had heard her friends discuss and assess the performances of the great Hollywood stars. Alice Faye, Claudette Colbert, Barbara Stanwyck, and Charlie Chaplin were growing more familiar than her own neighbors. On Thursdays and Saturdays there were matinee performances, but otherwise she didn't start work until evening. The first house began at 5:30, and the second at 8 o'clock. It was all over by 11. As the audience filed out to the sound of God Save the King, Lizzie felt she was returning to the everyday world. It was a scramble then to change out of her uniform and check that no one remained behind to be locked in. Joey was usually waiting for her in the foyer. "It's not safe for you to walk home at that time of night," he said. "The pubs are closing too, and turning out drunks out on the street. I'd rather fetch you." Often he had the van parked outside. He'd found he could use it in the evenings and leave it outside Bill's house on his way to work in the mornings. That way he had a shorter walk to the bus than from Onslow Road. Over the winter months when it was dark and cold, Lizzie liked being driven home. When the lighter summer nights came, she found after being confined in the smoky atmosphere of the picture palace that she needed fresh air and quite enjoyed the walk. She was seeing less of Joey and feeling guilty that she didn't mind being apart from him. Sunday was the only day they had together. The early magic of their first days in Birkenhead was fading. Joey even found fault with the house in Onslow Road. The bedroom was cold, the intimacy of one-room living had gone. One Friday night there had been problems with a projector, and the performance finished later than usual. Lizzie went to the foyer, humming one of the tunes Deanna Durbin had sung in the film, to find Joey not there. The cashier had cashed up and locked her booth. "Not like you, Joey, to be so late," she said, heading down the front steps of white marble.
"What you waiting for, Lizzie? Has he stood you up?"
the girls joked as they set off home in ones and twos. Lizzie was always anxious when Joey failed to appear when he said he would. He was reliable about keeping the time, and she knew he'd be there if he possibly could. She was shivering and didn't dare think of a reason. A policeman walked with measured gait along the edge of the pavement outside. She turned her back on him. She couldn't think of Joey and the police at the same moment. The lights inside were being put out. The manager had already gone. John Arthur, the projectionist, came out locking up behind him. The last thing he had to do was to draw the iron grill across the bottom of the front steps and lock it into position for the night. Lizzie had to move out onto the pavement. She knew he lived in the same direction as she did. She'd suggested to Joey one black snowy night that he might offer them a lift.
"No," Joey had said, "this is the only time we have together. We don't want him elbowing in."
Now John Arthur said, "I don't think you should wait here by yourself, Lizzie." Two youths staggered past singing raucously. The policeman had vanished. "They've had a skinful. Luke, I'm going your way. I'll see you to your door if you're worried."
"Thanks. I'm not nervous, but I might as well start walking. Something must have happened. Joey's never this late."
"Flat tire or flat battery or something like that, I expect."
Lizzie hoped desperately he was right. If Joey had been caught, there was no point in her waiting. He never would come. Would he go to prison? She took a grip on herself, made herself act as though all was well. "Joey'll know I've started walking if I'm not here." They walked along the main road and then turned off into a quiet avenue of modern semi-detached houses. It was a balmy summer night, and the lights were going off in the upstairs rooms. There was no traffic and nobody about. The moon was full, casting a silvery light over everything. Lizzie felt calmer as John talked about the film. Then, from a long way off, she thought she could hear the engine of Joey's van. If it was, she'd let her imagination run away with her. She was relieved but nervous, too, about how Joey would react. His love was strong and real. It was silly to have doubts about it. And yet, their footsteps rang on the pavement. John's voice droned on, though she no longer listened. The van screeched into the road on two wheels, accelerated towards them, then braked to a slithering halt alongside. Joey already had the window down and was leaning across the passenger seat. His eyes glittered angrily at her.
"Why didn't you wait? I'm only a few minutes late. I don't like you walking home. I've told you."
Lizzie shrank into herself. She knew he was growing more possessive and was easily worked up into a frenzy of jealous rage. "I'd locked up." John Arthur didn't appear to have noticed anything wrong. I persuaded her to start walking. Didn't want to leave her standing there. Too many drunks about.
It's nothing to do with you.
Joey!
She knew other people would find it hard to believe it was Joey's love that made him like this, but she didn't doubt it. He loved her so much it frightened her.
I don't like you walking home with strange men.
John isn't strange. I know him. He's the projectionist.
"With any man. Get in."
She could feel his love like a wall round her, imprisoning her.
"I'm sorry, John. I'd better go."
The man jerked forward almost before she was in and roared off in second gear.
"Don't you dare apologize for me,"
Joey spat through clenched teeth.
"You were rude to him. He was only being kind, offering to see me home."
"I don't like other men seeing you home, Lizzie. You're mine."
"Oh, for goodness sake!"
"I love you. I want to take care of you. It's not safe. Why didn't you wait?"
"Joey, I was afraid you'd been caught doing something you shouldn't, and you'd never come. You've never been this late before. I didn't know what to do. Anyway, we came this far without seeing another soul. I don't want you to meet me in future. I can't go through this again. I'll walk home."
"With him?"
His love was suffocating her. Lizzie took a deep breath.
"Joey, there's no need to be jealous. It's you I love. Anyway, John Arthur is married with three children. He's not interested in me in that way."
"How do you know? Look, Lizzie, we're on our feet now, and you don't need to work. We've got plenty of money, haven't we? You can become a lady of leisure. Why don't you give your notice in tomorrow?"
"I don't want to."
She was tingling with anger. The girls in the picture palace thought the greater the love a man had, the greater the security and bliss for the girl. But it didn't work like that. Joey was obsessional about her, and she wanted to loosen his hold. The trouble was, she didn't know how to do it.
"Stay home and look after me. That can be your job now."
Lizzie felt a rush of guilt as well as resentment. She had plenty of time to clean the house and prepare meals already. She enjoyed going out to the cinema in the evenings. Nick Bender felt at a loose end, lonely and a little down. Now Capital Farms had taken over Birch Hill, he found his weekend job much more impersonal. He did what he was told needed doing, and that was that. Long drawn-out meals round the kitchen table to discuss future plans for the farm were gone forever. Friendship and companionship were not part of the bargain. He saw much less of Marion, though she too was working for Capital Farms. He'd asked her to come to the cinema with him tonight. It had come as a shock, as well as a disappointment, to have his offer turned down.
"I've got a new boyfriend."
The giggle in her voice was more obvious than usual.
"Edmund Stanton, you know him, one of the managers. He said I ought to wait for Mr. Wright. Well, he's turned up at last."
"I'm so pleased for you, Marion," he said. But he was sorry for himself.
He wanted Marion's company, but now she'd severed the link. It left him alone and bored, sitting in his lodgings on a Saturday night. His discontent spilled over. He was fed up generally.
He didn't like working at Evans's, and he hadn't made any close friends with the people he worked with. Nothing provided him with solid satisfaction. He envied Jonathan and Hal, who had been encouraged to go after what they wanted. He knew he had to make changes in his life. He had to get out of Evans's. That was what he disliked most. After almost 3 years there, even Father couldn't say he hadn't tried hard enough. The one certain way was to write to Edmund Stanton and ask for a full-time job with Capital Farms. It wasn't all that long since he'd offered it, but the fact that he was now enjoying Marion's company made it harder to ask. He made himself do it while the bad mood was on him. He would post it straight away. Nick also knew he must go out tonight. Anywhere was better than moping here. He reached for the newspaper to see what was on at nearby cinemas. He wasn't in the mood for Jeanette MacDonald and Nelson Eddy or Wallace Beery, but Noel Coward's cavalcade was doing the rounds again, and he hadn't seen it yet. He reached for his Trilby, deciding to go. It was showing at a cinema he'd never been to before, but he'd passed it often enough on his way to Birch Hill, a rather run-down place on the edge of town. He crossed the foyer, bought his ticket, and followed the couple ahead into the auditorium. He'd arrived during the interval. The second house had not yet started. A scratchy record of Alexander's ragtime band was blaring out. Some cinemas had an organ and a resident organist, but this was not one of them. The lights were on, but it was still a dim, shadowy place. Small queues were forming to buy ice cream in front of the drawn curtains. Most of the seats were already occupied. An usherette came towards him and tore his ticket in half. There was something familiar about the way she walked. "Just one seat?" There was something familiar about her voice, too. "Yes, you're full up tonight." She shook her ash blonde head. "Plenty of singles left. There's one in the middle, there." She signalled with her unlit torch. He felt rooted to the floor. "Is that all right, or would you prefer to go nearer the screen?" She looked up and met his eyes for the first time. It was the recognition on her face that confirmed what had seemed a wild surmise. "Lizzie? It is Lizzie O'Malley." A delighted chuckle came fizzing out. "Yes, Nick, it's me." He couldn't believe the difference a few years had made. He was counting them up. She'd be 17 now. He remembered her as a waif-like child in heavy boots and dresses a size too large that always looked as though they needed ironing. Now she held her head high. Her slightly slanting blue eyes and generously full lips astonished him. She was beautiful. Her O'Malley plaits had gone. She wore her hair shoulder-length and loose. It was blonde and had a slight wave. The new thing about Lizzie was that she had shape, a really voluptuous figure that made his hands itch to reach out for her. Not at all what he would have expected. Her dark uniform, looking vaguely Cossack in style, came high at the neck, yet had it been cut daringly low, her figure couldn't have promised more. There was something else about her that affected the senses. The way she moved, the way she carried herself. He felt intoxicated. Surely she had to be more than 17. He couldn't believe this was the child who'd stirred his mother's sympathy. Nick felt as though he was choking. He was looking at her from different angles until he caught a flash from those slanting eyes. She'd caught him assessing her as though she were horse flesh. He felt the tug of attraction. "Is that seat empty?" It was near the aisle a few rows further forward. He didn't want to put a lot of people between himself and her. "I'll sit there." He hastily threw his coat onto it. "Lizzie, you have changed. I hardly knew you." "You've changed too." She was laughing up at him in amazement. "Fancy seeing you here, Nick. How are you?" "Can't we go somewhere to talk?"
"I'm working. Not until we close."
Her lips still lifted slightly at the corners. "I don't want to lose touch again. Can I take you home afterwards?"
"Well..."
"Lizzie, I want to talk to you. You rushed off to hide yourself last time. Where have you been?"
"I've got to go."
"Come back when you can, please." They couldn't concentrate on the film.
seeing Lizzie had jolted him back to life. He was tingling as he watched her showing latecomers to their seats. Turned round to see her standing by the door, waiting brothers to come in. Conscious of her presence all the time. It was, he decided, instant attraction, a new magnetism she'd developed in the last year or two. As he got up to go and talk to her, he was determined she would not disappear again. "How long have you been working here?"
"A long time."
She was more guarded now. She was over the surprise of seeing him, and she had a colleague within hearing. It was much darker now the film was on. He strained to see her face. "I thought you were working for two old ladies, living in, a housemaid or something." The other girl laughed.
"Lizzie's been here for years."
"Joey O'Malley said you didn't want any contact with the Mortimers or with me." He could feel Lizzie edging away, trying to get out of earshot of the other girl. He pushed open the swing door and took her out into the passage. The soundtrack echoed eerily in the distance.
"Lizzie, I've got to talk to you."
"All right, after we close. It'll be about 11.
"Are you living with Joey?"
She was nodding and not looking him in the eye again. He got the feeling something was wrong. "I'll run you home." He felt her draw back.
"Does Joey meet you when you finish work?"
"Not any more. I'll see you in the foyer." Nick was back in his seat, trying to concentrate on England's history. The film wasn't what he'd expected either. Lizzie was in a turmoil as she changed out of uniform. She'd sensed Nick's elation, his pleasure at seeing her again, and it had sharpened all her senses. One part of her was all eager anticipation, but he'd expect her to take him home, and she was worried. Joey wouldn't like it, and would probably make a fuss. She didn't want him to turn nasty in front of Nick. She'd been trying to think of somewhere else she might ask him to take her. But late at night, nowhere else seemed logical. If she didn't ask him in, just sat and talked in his car, perhaps the men needn't come face to face? She was glad she'd worn her good tweed coat and black velvet tam. She wanted to look her best for Nick. At the last minute she remembered the wedding ring of base metal she'd bought in Woolworths. She pulled it off her finger, pushing it under a handkerchief in her pocket. Under the bright light of the foyer, Nick still had a few freckles as well as his boyish smile. In every other respect he was more of a man than Joey. Taller and more squarely built, he looked stronger and more robust. He took her arm in the proprietary manner she remembered.
"You said you'd go back to Yarrow, but you never did."
Lizzie shook her head.
"I don't suppose you ever meant to go?"
"No. How are they all?"
"Just the same. Joey has another sister, but I suppose he knows."
"No, we've cut ourselves off, rather."
"No need to cut yourself off from me, Lizzie."
There was no answer to that, either. He was leading her to an Austin 7 chummy, opening the door and ushering her in. "Joey says you're a manager now at Evans's, that you're getting on very well."
"Not really."
He sighed.
"Not quite my niche, but I've got to earn my living like the rest. Are you happy working here?"
"Yes," she smiled. "What are the news from Yarrow?"
"Lucy's training to be a nurse in Liverpool. Jonathan's practicing as a vet, and Hal's a GP in Colwyn Bay. What made you hide yourself?"
"I haven't been hiding. I've been here all along, working at the Lyceum."
"But I thought you wanted to find out about your family. They could have done so much for you, Lizzie."
"Boarding school?" She nodded. "Joey reckoned I was past school by then."
"He did you no favour. You would have been better off than working in that cinema."
He kept turning to look at her. She felt mesmerised by him. Nick's eyes had not looked into hers like this in the old days.
"I asked him about you several times. He pretended you had a live-in job, that he saw little of you. And all this time you've been living with him?"
She was nodding again. Nick would be shocked if he found out they were living as man and wife. His sort didn't do that kind of thing. "This is our road. I'd ask you in for a cup of tea, but Joey might be awkward."
"Good Lord, what's this doing here?"
Nick pulled into the curb behind Joey's van, which was parked outside their house. It had been washed and polished,
and the advertisements for Evans's toffee gleamed as freshly as ever under the street lamp.
"Surely it doesn't belong."
"Not to Evans's any longer. It belongs to Joey."
Lizzie leapt to his defense.
"What's he keep it like this for? These old vans are supposed to be resprayed. They're sold on that condition."
Nick was out of his car, trying to peer inside the van. There were security grills on the oval windows and the back doors.
"Gracious, is it full of stock?"
Lizzie's mouth was suddenly dry. She was shaking. She realized that by bringing Nick here, she'd dropped Joey into the trouble she'd been hoping he'd avoid.
"I'll come in, Lizzie, and talk to him."
Nick was tight-lipped now.
"No, Nick, he'll be furious. You'll only have a row."
"Better here than in the office. Better for him, I mean. Too many years there. What's his game this time?"
"I don't know. Nothing. He's up to nothing."
"He won't have changed that much."
Joey's face came sleepily round the armchair as she led the way into the living room. When he saw Nick behind her, he rubbed his eyes, stood up. Sleep left him.
"Look who I've brought in for a cup of tea. He came into the cinema. So nice to see him after all this time," she said as brightly as she could.
Joey was staring at them in stunned silence.
"We see a good deal of each other," he managed at last. "You see a good deal of Lizzie, too, though you go to great lengths to pretend you don't."
Nick's manner had stiffened.
"I told you Lizzie wanted to be left alone. That's right, isn't it, Lizzie? Tell him."
It wasn't right at all. She'd never said such a thing. She should have pushed harder to see the Mortimers and pushed harder to see Nick. She'd been too willing to understand Joey's fears and do her best to resolve them. Too willing to believe they must always support each other. She knew now that Joey didn't always put her interests first.
"I thought we were friends," Nick said. "Some friend. You're on one side and I'm on the other."
"And I'm pig in the middle,"
Lizzie said,
"and I don't like it."
"I still want to take you to see Mrs. Mortimer. Will you come with me tomorrow?" "I've told you, Lizzie, I'll help you do all that," Joey blustered. "Hannah was disappointed when you disappeared. Really, she was. She very much wants to meet you. She took her time about it. She could have done it any time while you were living at Yarrow."
"You've taken your time too, Joey. You did promise," Lizzie reminded him.
"She's a lovely person. You'll like her. You want to know all about your family, don't you?"
Lizzie was tempted. She felt she'd been patient long enough. She'd met Nick again by chance, and there seemed no reason to pass up another opportunity.
"Yes, it's time we did, isn't it, Joey? We always meant to."
"I wanted to do it my way," he said coldly.
Lizzie took his arm.
"What better way than through Nick? We'll all go, Joey, if you want."
"I'll come and fetch you tomorrow."
Joey didn't answer.
"By the way, what's that Evans's van doing outside?"
"It's parked for the night."
"I can see that, but who does it belong to?"
"It belongs to Joey,"
Lizzie said quickly, afraid he'd lie when she'd already told Nick.
"That right?"
"Yes, it's an old one."
"You bought it when it came up for tender?"
Lizzie was growing more anxious. It sounded like an inquisition.
"No, bought it from somebody who did."
"What do you want it for?"
"Got a part-time business going with my friend, to while away the hours Lizzie spends in the pictures. He's a painter and decorator. Needed to carry stepladders, pasting table and stuff like that round."
Lizzie never ceased to be amazed at the natural tone Joey could bring to whopping great lies.
"The Evans name should be covered, resprayed. It was sold on that condition."
"Not to me," Joey said easily. "Not worth my bother."
"Who did you buy it from?"
"Can't remember his name. It'll be on file in the office. You'll have to look there if you want to know."
"Yes,"
Nick was frowning.
"Evans's should be pleased to see it still on. Free advert, isn't it?"
Nick turned to Lizzie.
"I'll collect you about 2 tomorrow, then."
"Yes, thank you."
"Better be going. It's getting late."
Joey led him out and then joined Lizzie in the parlour window to see him go. Before he got in his own car, they watched him take another look in the van. It was past midnight now, and the street lights had gone off.
"He'll see less than he did the first time," Joey said grimly.
She knew he was scared. Then, with his own engine and headlights switched on, they watched Nick take a pen from his pocket. He was writing down the van registration and the number on their front door.
"They'll know where I live," Joey fumed. "Know where you live. You've blown it sky high. We'll have to move."
"Joey!"
"What do you want to bring him here for?" "Snooping around. He's suspicious, like a dog sniffing out a rat. You let him straight in, Lizzie. Thank you very much."
"How did I know the van would be here? Usually it's up at Bill Purley's."
Joey's face was scarlet with rage.
"You don't bring anyone to our house. Never again, do you hear? I don't like other people here. Not anyone. And it's safer for me that way. You go on about me being caught, but you're the one putting me in danger. It was a stupid thing to do, and I don't want you getting involved with the Mortimers."
"But Joey, you always said..."
"It's them against us, isn't it?"
His eyes glittered angrily, seeming even less like a pair.
"I'm trying to take away what they have and give it to you. What do you want to make friends with them for? They didn't want to know you when you were a child and needed them."
"Joey, I'm not a child now."
Lizzie had long since realized she and Joey were no longer pulling in the same direction. She didn't want to go where he was taking her.
"I want to hear what this Mrs. Mortimer says. What's the harm in that?"
"Who's to know what you'll come out with when you get talking?"
Joey was totally exasperated with her, she knew.
"You're always going on about being afraid for me. Well, now I'm afraid you'll tell them something they shouldn't know. It makes it more dangerous for me. Surely you understand that?"
Lizzie paused. She understood only too well. She went closer, put her arms out to him.
"I want you to forget about getting your revenge on the Mortimers. I want you to stop stealing from them before it's too late."
His face was like stone. He stepped backwards away from her.
"I'll be happy as we are now."
She tried to slide her arms round his neck.
"So will you. We both need a more peaceful..."
Joey pushed her away angrily. Lizzie gulped. It had never happened before. Any approach she'd made had been eagerly received.
"Don't be so ridiculous. Wasn't this always our aim? Nothing has changed, Lizzie, but you. We came here to get our revenge."
"No, Joey, we wanted to be together."
Lizzie turned to him again, touched him. He shook her off roughly and strode upstairs without her. Lizzie rested her forehead against the cold glass of the parlour window. She felt empty. She'd had nothing to eat since 4 o'clock. Hollow almost, and drained of energy and hope. She went slowly to the kitchen. Joey had made ham sandwiches in readiness for her return. They waited, piled on one plate, with another turned over them. She saw it as an act of love. Usually they ate them in front of the dying fire. She put on the kettle to make tea, feeling torn in two between Joey and Nick. She'd been so pleased to see Nick and talk to him, but once he'd seen that man, he'd acted like a policeman and got Joey's back up. And Joey's reaction had made her see how wrong he was. She anguished over his cover-up story, fabricated on the spur of the moment. The worst part was, Joey said it was all for her. She was upset and hurt by his accusations. Lizzie set cups and saucers on a tray and took it upstairs. She pushed open their bedroom door. It was in darkness. Joey was a still mound on the bed.
"Joey, we haven't had our tea and sandwiches. I've brought them up."
She put on the light. He grunted, tossed over so he faced the wall, and pulled the blankets over his head.
"Joey, I'll pour you a cup. Please, Joey."
"Don't want any. Leave me alone, can't you?"
Lizzie bit into a sandwich. It tasted like dust in her mouth, almost choking her. She started throwing off her clothes and then slid under the blankets to him, put her arms round him, made him turn back to face her.
"Joey," she whispered, "we've never ever quarrelled like this before."
She rained anxious kisses on his face. "Not ever in our lives." He held her away from him.
"He's turning you against me."
She knew it was jealousy on top of everything else. Jealousy at its most virulent.
"No, it's not Nick." How could she say it was anybody who came near her? I hate us being like this.
Joey was shuddering, his breath coming in great pent-up gasps, his chest heaving with emotion. Her own face was wet with tears when he started to return her kisses. Joey was at his wildest. His lovemaking had never been so violent, so frenzied, so uncontrolled. The ecstasy came, but was short-lived. Her own feelings were a tumult of raw anguish.
"I love you, Lizzie. I'll give you anything. Would you like a new coat? You can have it."
"No," she whispered. "I've plenty of clothes now."
"A gold bracelet, or some pearls. I want to give you everything."
"No, Joey."
"A ring, that's it, an engagement ring. I should have thought of it sooner. Real diamonds."
"What I really want," Lizzie said, "is for you to realize you needn't be jealous of anyone."
"I do," he said. "When I'm thinking clearly, I do."
"I want us to be like other people. I want us both to be happy."
"We will be, from now on, I promise. We'll get that ring, too."
Lizzie felt a glimmer of hope. Perhaps it was possible to turn it all round.
"If you stop stealing, if you give up all ideas of revenge, you've got to stop Joey before you get in real trouble. And you have to accept you're doing it for yourself and not for me. It isn't what I want."
She felt him stiffen and knew immediately she was expecting too much.
"We'll do it my way." He sounded confident again. "Give up work, Lizzie. You're going to be busy looking for a better house. Bigger, newer, out in the suburbs, away from here."
Lizzie felt the tears wet on her face again as Joey fell asleep in her arms. She could still feel the rift between them like a physical no-man's land. It was widening, and she could see no way to bridge it. She felt resentful and angry, and wondered if she'd ever feel quite the same about Joey again.